checking back in from Arlington, Dallas. They get sensitive down here when you call it Dallas, when you're not in Dallas. See, like, I consider Arlington Dallas, but the locals don't like that. Regardless, it's where we're at for the Big 12 football media days. Iowa State takes the stage on Tuesday, but still lots going on Monday. Of course, our coverage is presented by the Iowa Clinic and the Iowa Clinic Men's Center. It's that time of year for me where I'll be going, getting my physical. And I go to Dr. Nicholson. Of course, he is located in Ankeny. I've told you about him a lot. And he's been a kind of a life-changing dude for me. Learned a lot about men's health. And I need to be better. I've had a tough summer. Probably packed on a couple of pounds. And I need to get back to being healthy for my daughter and my soon-to-be two daughters. As another little Williams will be arriving here, well, hopefully within the next month. I can't wait. But go to the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, 875-9000, iowaclinic.com. Easy and convenient online scheduling. That's my favorite part. All right. So my favorite thing about the Big 12 football media days is when Fox always hosts this, like, get-together that happens just after everything has gone on that day, where you can talk with their personalities and hang out and do all that stuff. And I've kind of become, I don't want to say buddies, but acquaintances with Joel Klatt, the color analyst for Fox College Football, and also Bruce Feldman. He's a sideline reporter. He also writes for The Athletic. Well, indeed, I caught up with them again this year to talk about Iowa State, to talk about a lot of stuff. And I've got both of those interviews for you that I'm just going to pack into the one single podcast here tonight. So let's start with Bruce Feldman. Kind of did these in chronological order. He's a guy I've looked up to a long time, one of the best college football writers in the country, if not the best. Here's my conversation from earlier on Monday evening with Bruce Feldman. It's interesting. I've covered Iowa State, I think, for 15 years now.
Wow, that's a long time.
Been coming to these things, and I added it up the other day. Just, it's always ninth, 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 six, 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 back when they were in the two divisions. And it just feels different this year. I mean, last year, I think people close to the program knew that they had a chance to be okay, but now there's actually some national expectations. I'm just curious, like, from a national perspective, where you see things right now, because, you know, we're so close to it. It's interesting to get your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, I think that they, like, I like the spot where everybody else in the media had them at three, because I think it's real. I mean, I talked to, like, a couple of coaches after they play them. I was like, so what exactly do they do? Like, you know, like, scheme-wide to throw you. And the biggest thing I heard was, he gets them just to play harder than you guys play. You know, it's like, they don't make a lot of mistakes, but they're just very physical, and they play really hard. And for us in the media, sometimes that's not the greatest answer, because it's not like a sexy kind of, it's a, you know, weird scheme. They do some stuff defensively, definitely, that gives people problems, but I just think he and that staff are really good evaluators, and now I think you have belief, right? Because there's nothing fluky about what they do, you know. And you know, you're going to see this quarterback. You know, I think Brock could be a guy. I don't know if he could win a Heisman at Iowa State. He's a really good quarterback, and they're going to have him for a while. You know, I think they're a legit top 25 team. Now, the question is, can they get to that eight? Can they get beyond the 8-4, 9-3 kind of range, and can they push past that? But the stuff you're hearing, it's because they won not just one or two. They won a bunch of games against you know, top 10, top 15 caliber teams, and I think that speaks to the respect everybody has for Matt Campbell.
Yeah, and it's hard to talk to, for me at least, to talk about Campbell without mentioning Haycock, too, the defensive coordinator. And I mean, it just seems like he's just been so innovative on that side of the ball that now you're starting to see guys from other bigger schools kind of adopt that. What is he the top five defensive coordinator in college football? I mean, where would you put him?
That's a great question. You know, I was talking to somebody today just about this. Is like, it's fortunate that he's still in Ames, you know, because usually guys like that get plucked away. And if he has another year like this, like he just had, I think that there'll be more people to come after him. You know, like, there weren't a ton of, you know, Lincoln Riley had his connection to Alex Grinch, so he went and got him. You know, Mario Cristobal at Oregon had a DC opening. Saban was promoting from within. And there weren't that many spots, but I think when you got a young group of linebackers, you really got a stud in the middle of the defense, you know, at nose tackle. And I think what they've really been really good at is they can take away stuff that you're good at, you know. And so, you know, as you, I'm just thinking about, like, where would I rank them? You know, a lot of people tend to rank guys as, well, Dave Aranda's the highest paid guy.
Yeah.
And Mike
Gopel
was the second highest paid guy. But he's, you know, definitely in the top 10 because of what, look what he's done, right? Look what he's done in what, in the conference he's in. And now they have some players, but still, it's not like, it's a little like what Dave Aranda did at Wisconsin, where you had really good production without, like, freaky athletes at all three levels. You know, Aranda had better athletes than people gave them credit for at Wisconsin, but they were really smart kids, and he could do a lot with them. And I think that's what he has. I think that's what he has right now at ISU, is they're smart kids, and they do a bunch with them. And I think it's just going to keep growing now as more people, you know, in the Will McDonald's of the world or whatever, say, all right, you know, I could go play there, but I want to go play here because I see what they're doing.
What's, were you surprised Campbell came back for another year? Because, I mean, we know he could have moved on probably if he wanted to, but he didn't seem to show a lot of interest. Did that surprise you at all?
No. You know why? Like, honestly, it surprised me a little that he took the job in the first place. But after he took the job, it doesn't, like, I've talked to him a bunch. You know, it wouldn't shock me if he ended up going someday to the NFL. I don't, you know, could I see him at USC? I mean, that would be a great hire for USC, but I'm not sure he's a USC guy. You know, I mean, if Ohio State came open again, you know, years from now, maybe. But, I mean, I don't think he's just going to take another job because you can tell he has a connection to the place. He's different than a lot of other guys. So I'm not – like, the fact that he took the job, I think, when I was like, man, that's a really hard job because you only get three non-conference games and one of them is against Iowa. You know, I'm not surprised he stayed because now he's building stuff. He's got a quarterback who's, you know, going to be there for at least two more years, probably three. I mean, that's the key piece. And guys know what he's about. I mean, he's just he is a big substance guy. So, you know, I mean, I'm not at all surprised he stayed.
They're picked third. TCU, in at least my opinion, TCU, Oklahoma State are ripe for a bit of a bounce back season. Those coaches tend to do that. I mean, what's interesting, though, from an Iowa State standpoint, they lose these two dynamic offensive players early, and then their expectations are even higher the next year. I guess, do you see, like, 3 through 6 in that league to be a little bit, it could go either way?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to throw, I don't know if you mentioned Baylor. If you want to throw
Baylor is the other,
That would put that. Now, the one thing, and Baylor has this too with Charlie Brewer, but the one thing I think that I pause on TCU, and look, we've done a bunch of TCU games over the last couple years, is that's like they have really good skill guys. The quarterback spot, I'm unsure of. You know, our crew did the Texas TCU game last year in Austin. And, you know, the quarterback, intangibles wise, you know, I'm down on the sideline. You know, you can watch how he talks to the players. You can see he has leadership qualities, coach's kid. But if you can't be accurate and complete the passes, then that affects it on a couple. It mucks up the run game eventually and everything. And so I think because I have more confidence in Iowa State's quarterback than I do in TCU's quarterback right now, that's why I would go 3-4. I have a tougher read on Oklahoma State. You know, I don't. I mean, I know they got two quarterbacks who are going to sort out who's going to be the guy, but you know, I'll be late on them. You know, I mean, I've heard good things about the Princeton OC, but you know, for me, if I had to rank 3, 4, 5, 6, I would go Iowa State, TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma State.
Okay. What about Texas, Oklahoma? Do you have a hot opinion on that one?
I'm leaning towards Texas. I really like the way.
Me too. I got killed for that in Des Moines. They're not Tom Herman fans in Des Moines.
Yeah, you know what though? Like, I think what's the difference to me is the momentum they had coming off the year. Now look, both teams have big question marks on defense.
Yeah.
Texas has to replace 18-year starters. Oklahoma's been really mediocre on defense. I like Alex Grinch. I think he'll help, but I just have more confidence right now in Sam Ehlinger than I do in not just Jalen Hurts, but a new Jalen Hurts coming in there with a rebuilt offensive line. Their receivers are terrific, but you know what? I think Texas has Colin Johnson. They have really good receivers. They get one of their toughest games is LSU, and they get LSU at home week two. If that game was in Baton Rouge, I'd feel much differently, but it's not. And I think you know, Texas has got more of a home field atmosphere than they had did a few years ago. It's gotten louder. Yeah. I think there's some energy in the place. Again, I think they feed off Sam Ehlinger. I'm picking Texas to win the Big 12.
I did too. When I went and covered the game in Austin last year with Iowa State, I mean, it was a physical beatdown. I mean, Texas just killed them, and it seemed like from then on, I don't know, they had young guys stepping up, and everybody like notes the starters that they're missing on defense, but I don't know, it seems to me they have guys to plug in there.
The part that I saw a big difference, so I had them week one against Maryland. It was a weather delayed game. I don't want to say they self-destructed, because Maryland burned their defense with a couple of really clever plays, and I don't think Texas really knew what they were getting against Maryland. And then we had them like week four against TCU. Now TCU's quarterback play was subpar, but I thought Texas showed a lot of toughness and, you know, it's the cliche word, grit, but they were a much different team than they were a year ago, and I think that's something that, again, it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't go, you know, if they lost to LSU and maybe sputtered around, but I think they're going to, I mean, if I look at them, I think they're a 12-1 team when they go to a playoff.
Thank you for that. Bruce Feldman from Fox College Football, also from The Athletic. Before we get to Joel Klatt from Fox, I do want to give a shout-out to our friends, Carl Chevrolet. All of our podcasts are powered by Carl Chevrolet, Carl Chevrolet Stewart. We appreciate them. Also, our partners at the Guthrie River Ruckus, the 2019 River Ruckus featuring Chris Cagle, Diamond Rio, to name a few, is coming up in just a few weeks. If you're interested in going, we can get you $15 off your tickets. Use the promo code Cyclones. I think he's the best analyst in sports, right there with Jeff Van Gundy in the NBA. I would put Joel Klatt from Fox. Always an entertaining guy. I had about 10 minutes with him on Monday night. Here is that conversation with Fox College football analyst Joel Klatt. All right, I was just talking to Bruce about how I've covered Iowa State for 15 years. And I've come to this event every year, and there's not once been actual national expectations for that program, and it feels like there actually is right now. Like, what have you seen covering the Big 12 and seeing that team the last couple of years to develop them to where they're at right now?
Okay, so most teams in this conference have a handful of really good players. I would argue Texas and Oklahoma have like more than a handful of really good players. But yeah, if you're talking, let's talk about the middle of the conference, okay? Everybody has a handful of really good players. Even Iowa State over the years have had a handful of really good players. But you win and lose games with the middle of the roster.
Yeah.
And I think for the first time, you're seeing Iowa State has a really legitimate middle of the roster. I think Matt's done an incredible job of finding the kids that fit his culture and his mentality. Tough-minded, sound, physical. They play quality defense. They don't beat themselves. All of that contributes to the point where you've got a foundation where now you can talk about Iowa State is just flat better than half the league. Okay? Then it becomes, hey, do you have an incumbent quarterback? Yes. Did your coach stick around? Is he really good? Yes. Oh, okay. Well, you can compete for the league championship then. That's as simple as this formula is. You know, is your middle of the roster better than how much a league? I would argue better than six or seven teams. Six? Let's call it
probably,
six.
Yeah.
Call it six, right? Just based on the last 2 years. Eight wins. What they've done defensively on the statistics side. I think it's legit, man. I think there's a reason that Matt Campbell's name, every single vacancy that comes open. So ADs call me all the time. They call me and they're like, hey, you know, what do you think? What do you think? Do you know the first name that they bring up every single time?
Campbell.
Do you think I can get Matt Campbell? I'm like, hey, I don't know. Call him. Sorry, your people are probably like, no, don't tell him to call him.
They're used to it. Trust me.
I truly believe if you just take the body of work of his career, you can make a strong argument that Matt is one of the top 10 coaches in the sport. 10 to 15, 10.
Yeah.
Everybody wants him. And he's made a commitment to a place that has a really loyal fan base, that has a good administration. Jamie's done a heck of a job with the contract.
Yeah.
You know, of making sure that it's difficult for him to leave, unless it's something that's just like over the top. And yeah. I think even Jamie would be like, hey, man, best of luck.
Yeah.
So, I love what Iowa State's doing, man. I got to tell you, like, on the field, I love it. Off the field, I love it.
Yeah.
I love what they've done. They've done it the right way. They didn't chase the – let me put it this way. They didn't chase the match, right? A lot of times what you see is these teams are trying to chase just, like, a brief period of success. They'll do anything for a brief period of success, like lighting a match on the side of a box. What does that match do? Boy, it's bright for really – and it just goes out.
It does.
Right? And they said, hey, let's do it the right way. Let's get the right coach. Let's give them the right tools, and let's light a candle and not light a match. And that's what they've done. I don't know. Maybe this is too effusive in my praise, but, like, I really like what they've done.
Let me ask you, because you watched the game like a quarterback, I would assume.
Yeah.
So what they've been able to do defensively has been really kind of incredible with that 3-3 stack that
yep.
Haycock is. And yep. Now you're seeing a lot of veteran defensive coordinators from really big programs kind of taking what he's yeah. doing. You've seen some of it in the yep. NFL now. So let me ask you this. Like, now they've done that a few years now. Are offensive coaches going to
sure.
find tweaks? And
sure.
what do you expect from that?
Yeah, I mean, that's
the game, right?
That's the sport. Yeah, that's yeah. the game. That's why we love it, right? Because it always evolves. And they're going to have to make adjustments. He can't roll out the same defense that they've played the last 2 years and say, like, have at it, boys.
Yeah.
Everything adjusts, and there's tweaks, and there's all sorts of things that go on. What I like about that system, though, is its flexibility when you're facing offenses, in particular in this league, that put as much skill on the field as they do. It's more pliable, you know,
yeah,
than other defensive structures.
Very multiple.
It's multiple. It's pliable. It's malleable. It's like Play-Doh to some extent. It's not an erector set.
Yeah.
You know, 4-3 defense can act very much like an erector set. There's only a few structures that you can get into. Rather than you throw some Play-Doh out there and you start to play with it a little bit, the concepts are the same. They're not running different concepts than other defenses, but they're doing it out of structures that make it easier to adjust to what the offense is giving. It also makes it very difficult for the offense to see what they're doing, to recognize what they're doing, and in particular in a pressure package to try to block what they're bringing.
What about you mentioned Brock Purdy. What do you see in him as a young quarterback?
Really like what I see from him. I like his he seems calm.
Yeah.
I think personally I think quarterbacks play better when they're calm, like Sam Ellinger in the Sugar Bowl. You can be fiery but calm, right? It's kind of like that. You can tell when someone's whole pace has, like, sped up, and he seems to just kind of, like, stay even keel. He's a talented guy. Now, he loses a couple of his really good weapons. I think David Montgomery is a big loss. I think Akeem Butler is a big loss. But from what I see with him, man, he's just a competitor. He's a quality player, and he's going to do the right thing with the football time and time again. That's what I see.
Do you think that I've actually talked with Campbell about this on the record? It's a fun conversation to have. But there was a game last year when they played Oklahoma State. I don't think you had it, but Montgomery was out. And that happened to be the game that Purdy came in and played for the first time.
That's right.
But Montgomery was out. Purdy comes in, and they called that game differently. They were more aggressive with their zone blocking. Like they were doing different things. Is there an with Tom Manning coming back as offensive coordinator? I almost felt like Campbell used 32 as a little bit of a security blanket. He loves being comfortable with that guy. He knew he wouldn't fumble. Could they loosen things up now because Montgomery's not there?
Listen, every great coach does what his players can do, not what he wants to do.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that, right? You always adjust to what your roster gives you. I think Matt will do that. So I think it'll look a little bit different. They might be a little bit more aggressive. I think they're going to lean on Brock Purdy's talents rather than lean on, you know, the safety net of David Montgomery.
Yeah.
Because he was he was a great safety net. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
In particular, when you're trying to build a program, remember now, there's this natural arc when you're trying to build a program where you're probably going to lose big early, and then you start to lose small, and then you start to win small, and then you start to win big. On that arc, man, you got to have some givens. You know, you can't be out there trying to blow people out when you're at a point where you're just trying to win. And I think that safety net was David Montgomery to a certain extent, and it helped him build this program. But now, what you'll see is some players that are very talented. I think Brock's talented enough where you can lean on him a little bit more than having to have some, not dynamic, but like really sound run game.
It's crazy to me, having been around the program so long, that they could lose two guys early as high NFL draft picks like they did with Butler and Montgomery, and then they're picked to be better the next year. Is that the rest of that roster kind of catching up like you were talking about?
Yes, he's done a nice job in recruiting, but that's also – remember, if the NFL is driven by quarterbacks, college football is driven by coaches.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, so – A lot of this is driven by the fact that all of us believe in that guy. He's just a good football coach. As long as he's on the sideline, I feel like we're all going to be like, hey, Iowa State's going to be pretty tough. That's what we think about TCU. Do any of us really know about TCU this year?
No.
But Patterson. Guess what? Gary Patterson's there. Do any of us really know about Oklahoma State?
No. It's the
no.
Same thing.
Hey, Mike Gundy's there. He always wins 10 games. Gary Patterson always bounces back.
And they were both down last year, so you expect to bounce back.
That's right. Yeah. Why? Because of their coach. So, is Iowa State going to be down next year? I don't know. Maybe. Do I expect them to compete? Yep. Why? Their head coach.